I'm Chris Barker.
And I'm Will Betts, and this is the Music Tech My Forever Studio podcast, brought to you in partnership with Audient. And we're coming to you this time from TYX Studios in London.
That's right. In this podcast, we speak with musicians, producers, engineers and DJs about their fantasy forever studio.
The fantasy studio that our guests dream up is one that they are going to have to live with forever. But even in fantasy foreverland, we do have some rules, don't we, Chris?
Indeed, there are rules. Okay, so our guests will get to pick a DAW, an audio interface and a computer for free. Then they will get just six other bits of studio gear and one luxury item.
However,
no bundles!
That's right, no bundles. Choosing a product that is a bundle of software or hardware as a single package is not allowed.
This time we're joined by a British electronic music producer and Grammy award-winning songwriter.
That's right, our guest co-wrote Sam Smith's Stay With Me, and he's on the brink of releasing his fifth studio album.
And he is sometimes, and only sometimes, a gear nerd.
That's right. This is My Forever Studio with Will Phillips, aka Tourist. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, chaps.
Hopefully, a gear nerd today.
I'll decide which hat I'm wearing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you can't be too much of a nerd because you only get six items. So,
well, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a full nerd out situation.
Put a cap on it.
Which I love, effectively, because I think so many of the problems of music production and songwriting are often just too much choice. You know, actually having six is perfect for me, because I'm always the person who's like, I literally go to the dump or the recycling centre as often as I can. I'm like, I want to limit the amount of things in my life. Like, musically.
A minimalist.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a minimalist, so to speak. I don't want to live in like a glass box, but I hate having things I don't use, you know. So if I love it and use it, I'll have it, you know.
And has this always been the way? So let's jump back before we get into the free items and that. Let's jump back. Has that always been the way? Like, how did you get into music? I mean, was it from a single instrument or...?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely from the piano. So, like, ever since I was about probably 3 years old, I always we had a piano in our house. And I always just, you know, as a child, you wander up to something and try and explore it. And I just played the piano. And then my parents could clearly see that I had a kind of interest in it, not any talent, but just an interest. And they were like, do you want lessons? And I tried lessons, and it was the absolute worst thing I ever did, because it made what was fun formal. And
you made to do grades and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I hated it, really, because it took out all the joy of experimenting and all the joy of finding it out by myself, which I think is such a fundamental part of why I love music, is that feeling of self-discovery. I think that's what it is. And I think, the piano was like the starting point for everything. And then I kind of grew up... Well, I'm 37 now. So I was like 12 in 1999. So it was the real like ascendance of like technology and music all becoming this one interesting new place. And there were so many developments in like technology that would really, you would hear them in the music. I feel like, interestingly, now we're at a point where technology is not really fundamentally changing how music sounds. I don't really think, and I don't think it has done for about... probably 20 years or so. I think the fundamental paradigm of how we make music has been pretty much the same for about 20 years. There's certainly definitely things that have changed. I'm going off on a tangent.
No,
love it. This
love
is it.
But I do think that, you know, that fundamentally the laptop, that we could be in 2004, the laptop would be bigger, the microphone would probably look exactly the same.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be endlessly scrolling this content on TikTok. But the fundamentals haven't really changed. You know, I remember like eMagic, and when that Logic was a product by them.
Yeah.
You don't have to sort of pick a lane anymore as such, whereas you kind of did with technology versus like acoustic recording or recording techniques. Now it's all just overlapping and bundled together, and the same people use plugins that use studio gear, and it's all just one thing.
Yeah, that's sort of I feel like there's a blessing and a curse element to that, everybody has to do a bit of everything. How do you find that? I mean, you must be self-producing. Are you working with producers?
Yeah, I mean, I produce all my own music. I mean, on my newest album was slightly more collaborative. I mean, I'm incredibly protective of how I make my music, in a sense. And I think that I tend to really only collaborate with people who I really, really get along with and like. And I have a good friend of mine, Tom, who was the best man at my wedding, but who's also an incredible musician and producer, and he scores films and things like that. But he is a really good friend of mine, and he helped me kind of co-produce a lot of my new record, which was great. But it was a very strange process, you know, giving up a little bit of...
Is that the first time you've done that then?
Yeah, really. Songwriting, I've worked with lots of other people. I'm very used to it in the songwriting context. But in terms of production for Tourist, it's very rare that I'd ever kind of let anyone in on that process. But yeah, you know, other people are all right, I guess.
So when did you manoeuvre from that piano to recording the piano, or thinking I want to make songs rather than just playing piano?
I think the piano probably became a keyboard, and then the keyboard became like
an interface to that.
Exactly, it became like I think it was a Yamaha DJX.
Yep, I had the same one.
Did you? Yep. Shout out to my dad for buying me that.
Yeah, with the little ribbon controller.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Remember the Klaxons did that tune?
Yeah.
Which is the DJX, so that was very strange.
You still hear bits of it, like the come on.
Yeah.
DJ.
Yeah.
That was so good.
Was it DJX 1 as well, the blue one? Because they did a DJX 2 as well,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
In black, wasn't
they,
as good.
No,
they
no,
tried
it
to put a little. They tried to put like a more of a DJ element to it, scratchy.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah. I like the little ribbon controller. But I did the same thing. Mm. But it was actually, what was cool with it was not just the built-in sounds are fun, but it had proper filtering and cut-off and resonance. You could access controls and the ribbon controller. You could assign those to MIDI.
It was kind of amazing, actually, thinking back at it, you know, because it was the same time as, like, groove boxes were a thing, you know.
Keyboards with speakers in as well.
Keyboards with speakers, you know. And then I had this computer that was, like, a thing, and I was like, how are they going to interface? And then I got, like, Cubasis, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
In, like, the year 1999.
Yeah.
So that was really my first introduction into like sequencing, you know, the concept that a computer could sequence an external instrument and, you know, that external instrument could trigger MIDI on a computer. And that was mind-blowing, really, even though that had been going on since the 80s. Yep. But for me as a 12-year-old, it was amazing, you know.
And you start programming the smallest, most intricate stuff that's unplayable.
Do you know what? I probably I did the kind of, you know, like that. There is an instinct in us to kind of do, you know, make it like a computer game. You know, that mindset of like building something that you could never build in reality. And, but I feel as though something about that I just dislike, because I feel like
I disliked it as soon as I'd done it.
Yeah,
it's like, this isn't music.
But I guess that was IDM, wasn't it?
You know, exactly.
Back in the day, that was, you know, like Square Pusher and Amon Tobin and obviously Aphex Twin.
They just did it.
But they were doing it because
it
was turning it on its head. It was but there's always going to be a place for that. Now you listen to like probably best examples you have like Max Cooper or John Hopkins, people who really know how to program things in a way that feels so beautifully human in a way. But so it was late 90s, early noughties was my introduction, and it's just one of those things. I just enjoyed it so much that I just stuck with it, you know, which is. It's rare to find something that you love so much. The process of discovering and learning about it, you know, it's that is a lifelong journey, I think. And whenever you feel that sense of like, oh, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, or I don't feel inspired, actually just going back to the craft of making something.
I thought you were going to say, going back to the Yamaha DJX. Come on! Now I'm inspired.
Indeed, that was it. Whenever I go back to that dusty, this is the one thing I'm going to have.
Do you still own it?
No, I don't.
Oh, I gave mine away as well, and I actually miss it. I think it would be quite fun to have back.
I probably have an equivalent synth now that I have probably a couple of synths that I really have an emotional connection with. But the DJX is a really, really nice, like something I have very fond memories of. That synth.
Again, like what you're saying about playing the piano, though, it was fun, so it made you want to go to the next step of doing. Sorry, listeners, I've just spotted on Will's laptop that he's on eBay looking at
Reverb.
How much?
Sorry,
it's sold, unfortunately, but £100.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not like it's not something that's not a good investment.
No, it's not. It's not
well,
gone vintage.
Maybe the market's bottomed out, and now's the time to buy.
Exactly.
Now we're talking about it.
All only up from
it's
here.
It's only up from here, guys.
To the moon.
Exactly.
Right. Let's start on building this dream studio and talk about the location, what you would have.
Mm.
If you could have a studio anywhere in the world, and what would it be like? And
what
would it be designed like?
It's funny because I've actually just built a studio.
Perfect.
In my garden. And I've also just done the garden, basically. So I'm a bit of I love gardening. Mm. It's like a real passion. It's just kind of probably like every, you know, bloke during the pandemic who got bored. I looked outside and we just moved into a new place, and there was this garden, and something really enjoyable was like planting seeds, being a horticulturalist, really. So I actually just did that in our house. And one of the nicest things at the moment at this time of year is just seeing spring evolve. Mm-hmm. It's like so beautiful, like seeing magnolia and daffodils and things. This is the Gardening World podcast,
yeah.
Right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so fundamentally, the studio I've built is basically surrounded by flowers and trees in the garden, which is...
And you look out onto it from the studio as well?
Yeah.
You got a window?
In two directions, yeah. Right. Wow. So, but I was thinking, okay, dream studio, let's take that to like, what would be the most extreme example of that? And I was thinking, one of my favourite places in the world is Scotland and the Highlands. Wow. So I was just imagining being on a loch, you know, like... in a bit of a kind of, not hut, but, you know, like a pretty humble...
Scandi style or...
I don't know. I'm like almost thinking more like Banshees of Inisherin. Kind of,
okay.
Did you watch that?
Yeah.
Just a kind of very humble wooden cabin. Just makes, as long as it's warm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's a nice glass element to it. Maybe there's a, you know, a window.
You want to see out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't want a little...
Yeah, I don't want it to be too kind of... yeah. This is an unlimited budget here, right?
Yeah, it's Forever Fantasy Studio, yeah.
For me, this studio fundamentally has to be immersed in something that just feels completely natural, like the natural world. So I think Scotland, I think the Highlands, I think being out on a loch, something like that. That never
Loch Ness, just in case?
Maybe. I've been there.
It's just in case.
Well, yeah. You never know.
You never know.
You never know, right?
I mean... Nessie goes past.
Exactly.
That's going to inspire you.
Yeah.
If the album fails, I can just be the guy who just found Nessie.
Again.
So that's where, it doesn't matter.
Just come out with a massive beard. And I haven't done any music, but you've got all these blurry photos instead.
That's actually a great PR campaign for your...
Yeah. Just recorded up. And I just have like one of those cameras just forever recording.
Yeah. That just wakes you up. Gets a
like a ring doorbell.
Yeah.
A ring doorbell for Loch Ness.
Yeah.
Why don't they have that? That would be an
they
easy...
They could.
Yeah. Sort it out.
It's a lack of will.
Don't want to believe.
Yeah. I don't know if Loch Ness is the most beautiful loch, though, if you've ever been there. It's
nice, but
it's like long and it's like very long. So it's not like... I picture something, you know, it could be Scotland, it could be Norway, somewhere like that.
Okay.
Something just
by the water.
Yeah, by the water, but by lots of trees as well. Yeah. So, I mean, it could be somewhere in America, you know what I mean? It could be in like...
We're going to have to push you for a location.
All right, let's go. I think I'm going to go Scotland.
Okay.
Fine with that climate?
I'm fine with the climate, yeah.
Mm, okay, cool.
Yeah, there's a wood burner in there. There'll be a wood burner on a beautiful, you know...
It's getting warmer all the time, obviously.
Exactly. That's why I'm moving up there, because we fucked the world.
Perfect.
Okay. So,
what about the vibe inside the studio, then? Mm.
Well, again, because I've just recently done this, I'm probably just going to reference what I did.
Yeah,
like oak flooring, you know, kind of just off white walls, and then just my favorite art, you know, like my favorite pictures, whether it's something that my daughter's drawn, or a really beautiful like Rothko, or.
We can
like
get to some of that kind of stuff potentially in your luxury item right at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
But you are thinking it kind of like in terms of furniture, it's very wooden. It's very kind of. It's not the spaceship studio.
No, I hate nothing more than those like spaceship studios. I hate it actually. I really don't like it when a studio looks like a studio. I feel like it's just a way for people to make themselves feel important.
Ah,
it's like a bit like an office, isn't
Nicely
it?
Nicely put, yeah, very corporate. Yeah,
I'm not into that. I want it to have like just like even if it's old furniture, like I want my synths on like an old like Victorian table with a bit of a story. Do you know what I mean? Or
haunted, maybe.
Maybe. You can, yeah. Not.
How
really
do you haunt a table?
Yeah.
It's not me you need to ask, Will.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's ever asked that question in the history of time.
That's what we do here.
Yeah. So, I would have furniture, probably like antique furniture. I'm not really into like mid-century stuff. I think that's done. I think I would have just stuff that feels a bit older. A nice comfy chair, you know, and then a kind of more functional stool or a seat to...
Yeah.
Yeah, but no space.
I can picture
lights.
This vibe, though. I'm getting it.
Yeah, I'm
getting it.
So, none of these lights. Sorry, guys.
All right, it's all right.
I like them, but just...
Welcome to our spaceship.
Yeah. It's good for this, though.
The Friends Studio spaceship.
This is where we open these and reveal our lock.
Yeah.
Got him! Yeah. In the middle of London.
Yeah.
Camden lock.
Nice.
Very nice.
Not a bad pun there.
Smooth.
Smooth. Got out of that one. Okay, let's move on to the three free items that we have. Mm. So every guest gets to choose these. A computer, an interface, and a DAW.
So a computer, I mean, it's going to be a Mac because I'm not going to like move all my stuff across to other stuff. I can't be bothered. I've been doing it for so long now.
Big one, small one?
I just like a laptop, really.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I do have a display, an external display, but there's something that feels, I don't know, a bit corporate about sitting looking at a display sometimes. You know.
Sensing a lot of anti-corporate sentiment here.
I don't know.
It's okay.
I like the display with the speakers, but sometimes it can kind of make you write in a certain way. You're kind of sitting, thinking about your music in a certain way. Like, I almost want the computer to be the small thing off on the side.
And I guess it enables you to take it out to outside on the nice, you know, you've got that kind of thing with it.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, when I was 13 years old, my dream was like a laptop and an interface and nothing else. And there is a huge part of me that would just say that is my dream studio.
Well, this podcast is great for that, if that's a dream. Well, you'll have more than enough stuff.
I honestly am now at that point where it's just like the less is the better. It helps you focus on the ideas. If you can't do it on one of these computers, there's no excuse.
Yeah, it's your problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and I love that about the...
Oh, God!
But there are a few things that I'm actually like, no, I do love this and I do love that. And there are certain qualities, you know, it's like I don't just wear the same clothes every day. Do you know what I mean? There's a certain romance in life that you want to, like, you know, have certain things that you have an emotional attachment with, and there are certainly things like that. But I do think that the laptop is such an unbelievably powerful tool, and especially when it's combined with like a phone. And the reason is my fourth album was really just written on a laptop and a phone. I sampled everything from the phone. I don't know why, I could have just done it from the laptop, but there was something really nice about just
having it like a tape recorder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly that. Having a phone as a sample source and then just taking an audio cable out of it, albeit with however many fucking adapter plugs you need nowadays just to get audio out of a phone into a computer. But yeah, there was something so pure about, cool, going from the phone to the laptop, straight into Quick Sampler in Logic, and then anything you want. You know, your palette of sounds from sampling is, well, it's literally infinite, which is, for me is, you know... so important. I've completely forgot what the question was.
DAW, audio interface. we're choosing the laptop.
The laptop would be a Mac. Yeah.
So spec'd out whatever the latest Mac is, right?
Yeah, just like the ridiculous, I have to remortgage my house to buy one. They're amazing now, these laptops, though, aren't they? They are just like...
And we're up to M3 now, right?
M3 MacBook Pro.
And there'll be an M4 next year, next month or something.
Sure.
But, you know, you can write... I mean, I remember I wrote my first few EPs on like a MacBook Air with like nothing, with just like 4 gig of RAM or something. Mm. It's like, you know, you adapt to the technology. You don't need the, you know, that's how it should work. You know?
Well, back in the DJX days, you know, it's the same thing though. You just figure it out, don't you?
Yeah.
Because you could sample into the DJX as well.
I remember. Which is fantastic.
Only tiny fragments, but it's like it's 1.2 seconds or something. And it's like, you could sample into it, which was, again, at the time, quite... For such a cheap keyboard, or value for money keyboard. Mm. But like for such a, one of those, it was, to be able to sample as like a 13, 14 year old.
Yeah, back then it was unbelievable experience,
And you could manipulate them with the ribbon control and like sort of scratch the samples. Like you could do the pitch. That's kind of cool.
It's cool,
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, amazing device. Like, and I definitely think it was like so exciting. Like, you know, you think about the generation now who've got like the OP1 or whatever it might be. Mm. That is their DJX. Wealthy kids.
Yeah. But the phone is the DJX for the kids that don't. You know,
of course,
Any smartphone, you can do similar things. And like you say, you adapt to the technology.
Yeah.
Like,
but in a way, it's almost less impressive because you've always had it.
Yeah, so
it's, but that's just, you know, the slow... Or I don't know if it's slow or very steep curve of technology, just, you know. But
okay, well, let's look at
I would say Mac, audio interface. I've spent so much money on their plugins that unfortunately Universal Audio have me in a death grip.
Well, they don't hear.
Oh, do they not?
They don't. You can have anything you want. And there are no bundles. So.
There's no bundles.
Yeah.
Okay, what audio interfaces do you guys use, out of interest?
I use an Evo.
I've got an Evo.
One of these.
An Evo 4, which is... different.
It's the same brand, but it's...
Audient.
Yeah.
I also run an Apollo Twin as well.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And I'm not just saying this. I actually only run the Evo 4. I used to have a big rack. I can't remember what it was, like a Focusrite or an M-Audio, a big, like, loads of inputs. But I had all of that and never used any of the 16 preamps or 8 preamps or whatever it was. It's like, I don't need that.
As well, yeah.
So I've got the Evo 4 now, again, because it's laptop and interface moving around. You still do get the plugins that come with the interface you buy. Okay. You just don't get your account to log into with everything.
There's no Wi-Fi in Scotland, right?
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to stay with what I know because it's boring. Yeah. And these three questions, you know, I'm not going to...
That's why they're free. Get these out of the way.
So look, we're just going to keep it UAD.
What have you got at the moment? The 8?
Apollo
8?
Yeah, I have an Apollo 8. I have two of those. And then I have... Because there was a period when if you bought one of those, they'd give you a free satellite. And I have like four of these satellite things. And then I have an Apollo Twin. And then I have an Apollo X16, which I used to use.
When you said they got you, they really got you. You got a lot of stuff. Yeah. That's cool, though.
Yeah. Well, it's not because I think more is better. It's because I've just acquired it over a long period of time. And actually...
But they all work together, right?
They do. Yeah. But I don't have anything like what I require. I have far too much, I mean, in terms of inputs.
Yeah, that's like what I was saying. I just slimmed it down to the Evo.
So I think, in honesty, I could probably get away with like an Apollo 8, I guess it would be.
Preamps or...
Yeah, with the preamps.
Yep.
Yes, that depends if I'm going to go on it. Yeah. Right.
Stick that in. We can come back.
Yeah, we can always come
back.
That's
the rack-mounted one,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone's watching this guy. This guy doesn't know anything about gear. What a loser.
You don't have to. We don't either.
No.
It's just so much, isn't it? Of course.
There's so many things. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to things like interfaces and a lot of options.
And I think I'm at this fortunate position now where I don't need to sit around reading what do I need to buy. I just need to focus on like, okay, what's my next record about, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, but I mean, there are plenty of people who really enjoy the process of researching and buying stuff, but I'm really that opposite guy of just like, I just want to get rid of things. I want to focus. I just want to keep it like, the idea has to reign, you know, that has to be the thing. But
so let's look at your DAW then, if we're locking in that Apollo.
Originally, I was using Reason when I was like 16, 17. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's still going, isn't it?
Oh, Reason. Yeah, it's still going, yeah.
Which was the most unbelievable piece of music software. But then when I was like 17, I was like, oh, I've got to use... I was like, I've really affected by that horrible way of thinking, which is like, oh, you've got to use that, man. And I was like, oh, I feel really bad that I use Reason. And it's like...
Yeah, Reason suffered that, as did FL Studio.
Yeah.
And probably still do.
The
amount of records that have been made on both...
Yeah,
and people say that it was Pro Tools or Logic when they're interviewed. Yeah. Oh, it was we did it in this, but we finished it in this. It's like people were knocking out records in Reason and, you know, FL Studio.
I know.
Long before people would admit to it.
Yeah. And there, for some reason, that 17-year-old brain of mine was like, well, I've got to use this because then now I'm going to step it up if I do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a terrible way of thinking because...
But I think everybody's gone through that at some point.
Yeah. So I really suffered from that. But what that meant is basically I migrated to Logic aged 17, 18.
And did you plug Reason into it?
I did, but I can't rewire things, man. I hate the faff.
Mm-hmm.
I just hate...
It's a plug-in now, though, right?
Is it really?
Yeah, it is now a plug-in, yeah.
Okay.
You can just plug Reason in. So maybe for one of your... But you're going to go Logic Pro as your door.
Yeah, that's just
and
Logic
And then maybe
Pro.
Reason will...
Well, no,
we'll,
I mean...
We'll see.
Well, honestly, if you opened up Reason, I wouldn't know how to use it. I remember the most novel thing about it was that you could switch...
Yeah.
You push tab or
the tab key,
like
yeah.
And they dangle
the
a little bit, the wires
worked.
As well.
It worked. It was such a lovely... You know, I guess it was like real OG, like skeuomorphism, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, 2002. I remember, I just thought it was the most amazing piece of software.
So realistic. Occasionally you had to take the jacks out and screw them in a bit. Give them a wiggle.
Exactly.
Yeah, the crackle as it goes in.
I mean,
yeah.
I thought that was really charming and I thought that was a really nice part of that system, whereas Logic obviously just felt like an old school like tracker / sequencer thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm with Logic now and it's been a good relationship and we are a long way through it and we've had a bit of therapy.
Yeah.
But we're okay and we're out the other side.
And, okay. 20 years with Logic.
Yeah. So we'll lock those three in and we'll move on to your actual selection here. So your six studio items, what's item number? So that's all you've got so far.
That's
so
great.
Think about that.
So I've got an interface, a Mac, and then some software.
Yeah.
Fine.
The Music Tech My Forever Studio podcast is supported by Audient, makers of the ID range of audio interfaces.
Yes, building on Audient's 25 years of design heritage, the ID range spans from the portable ID4 to the more feature-packed ID14 and 24 interfaces, all the way up to Audient's powerhouse desktop interface, the ID44.
You can expect rugged build quality and exceptional audio performance across the entire range, with every ID interface using the same award-winning console mic preamps found in their renowned recording console, the ASP8024HE.
The ID24 is the latest addition to the range, featuring two of those console mic preamps, along with balanced inserts, a JFET instrument input, ADAT expandability, and customizable monitor control, making the ID24 and its larger sibling, the ID44, perfect for using with outboard equipment and tracking instruments and vocals.
That's right, and the Audient ID24 is available now, priced at £299, €349, and $399.
Visit audient.com for more information and to explore the full ID interface range.
Item number one. Yeah. What's going to be?
Okay, so speaking about my fourth album, which was called Inside Out, that the revelation of being in lockdown was that I couldn't get to my studio because I actually used to have a studio not far from where I live, but there was a kind of physical barrier. You know, you weren't really allowed to go out and work. So I ended up doing everything on the laptop and the phone. So the first thing is going to be a phone.
Okay, well, we can give you a phone, I think.
I think you're allowed your phone.
Oh, I'm allowed my phone?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to cut you off from society.
But if you want any specific apps on the phone, they will be.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going stock, guys. Well, stock. Okay. But voice memos, yeah?
Okay.
You can have that.
Yeah. I can have that?
Yeah,
but tell us about it. Yeah.
Tell us about it, but we won't.
But it's so important. I almost want to use this as one, because I think if you view it as...
But we can upsell dreams on here. If this is important, do you not want like a really nice recorder?
Of course, but I'll lose it and I'll break it because knowing me, I'm just like.
You actually painted. It's a good question.
Okay. So, we've upsold some dreams.
Upsell your dreams.
Okay. I really like this idea and I was toying with whether if I get a phone, fair enough. But the reason that phone is going to be used a lot, and the reason is I love sampling from my phone. I love just plugging a jack into it and then into my Mac or into another device. But. Voice memos is just absolute no-brainer. I love recording the sounds of nature around me. I love recording ideas melodically. I love recording like soundscapes, being on the tube. That stuff finds its way into my music just because, I mean, it just gives context to everything that you write. Mm. And it's just such an unbelievably useful tool. So yes, a really good portable recorder, like a Sony. I'm trying to think. I've actually got one, but it's been. I've just been migrating two studios into one. So I'm trying to think what would be a really lovely, the one with the nice furry two.
Yeah, stereo. There's probably some ones that are a lot easier to use as well now. That in terms of fancy touch screens or fancy interfaces.
Well, I was being the person I am. I remember going and buying like a little thing you plugged into your phone that gave you two.
Ah, yeah. But was that Rode? Did Rode do something?
Yeah, Rode did that. IXY or something like that.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That's
and cool. Then the phone changed. So you could... just like, okay.
Well, we could go for something like that for your phone. That could be the item, something that upgrades
the spirit,
your phone.
Yeah, in the spirit of making your phone even more useful, I would love something that would allow me to record... Yeah.
Like a case with two big mics on it that works.
I mean, there's even a part of me that's really happy with that built-in iPhone mic because it has such a character. It sounds like the year that the phone was made. It's got that kind of... And the compression, that whatever they do with that compression, you know, it's really interesting.
It can take a lot as well, can't it?
Yeah,
it can take a
lot. It can take so much.
Dynamic range because...
And I think people, they can hear an iPhone mic. I like that.
I'm going to throw one curveball in here. There is that Teenage Engineering CM15 portable studio condenser microphone that goes with a field recorder.
Okay,
like a little field. Oh no, actually, do you know what? They do
that would be a bundle though, wouldn't it? It surely will.
Oh my god.
Are you bundling yourself?
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
That's something that's ever happened before.
I might You can get someone else in for the next one.
What's the thing about bundles, guys? Why don't you like bundles? You just
it's too much of a hack. We've
too
got
easy.
Limits.
No, okay, fine.
Yeah. If you're I'll just get all the UA plugins.
Okay.
That's like a whole
It's not
studio.
Much of a podcast, is it?
Or Waves or whatever it is.
Okay, I understand the logic behind it. Yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah. But no, actually, I think that's a good suggestion. The OP, what is it called?
The field recorder.
Field recorder.
Is, it's got some really memorable name, like TP something.
That's it. Let's go with that then, or an equivalent of that. An incredibly portable, really high quality mic that is easily transferable to a computer. Like, if I have to take an SD card out, I'm not using it.
Yeah, it has to be like USB straight in.
Boom.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why I even love so much the methodology of just plugging audio cable through a phone to a computer, because there's no data transfer. It's just literally just the time it takes to listen to the thing. You know, I love that. But, yeah.
Well, let's put that in for now. And when we get to it, if you feel like you want to go back to your phone, can do that.
I'm a bit of a sucker for anything that looks nice as well. Yeah. As long as it performs well, you know.
You guaranteed that with the Teenage Engineering stuff.
It'll look nice.
It looks lovely.
Yeah.
TP7. Whoa. It's
TP7, and it's £1,300 pretty much.
Goodness yeah. me. And it's wow. tiddly as well. It's really small.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Yeah. So, slip in a pocket.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
Because if the phone's Great. Included, fine. Fair enough. Yeah.
Done.
But for me, that is a real no-brainer. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's move on to item number two.
Mm-hmm. I have a kind of a lineup of synths, maybe four or five in my life. And there's two that have just always stayed in my studio. And the other ones, are just they're just expendable, really. So it's like one of them is going to be my first that I'll talk about. But it'll be the Moog Model D.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
I have one of those.
Lovely. What era?
I was a bit new to it. And my friend was like, hey, man, this is a really nice synth. If you can get one of these. I was like, I rang my accountant. Lloyd. And I did have his blessing, which was good. But yeah, I got one actually from a newer one. So it was 2017.
Oh, the reissue one.
Yeah, the reissue one. And nice. For me, it's just incredible. That synth, if you need a bass sound, if you need a pad sound, honestly, I find the mid-range with it, obviously because it's not polyphonic, you can't do much with that, but you can definitely layer things.
Yeah.
But something about that synth, I think what it is about it is there's no, I don't know the technical term for this, but you know a menu when you have to dig through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's the phrase for that kind of menu style? I
annoying.
menu diving yeah. is not something you have to do.
Just think when every button has a function.
Yeah, it's like, knob indeed. Per function.
Yeah,
that is, knob per function is, that is absolutely one, like a completely crucial thing for being in a studio, which is probably why I really have never got along with like modular synthesis. Yeah. And I've tried.
Well, you wouldn't be able to have those. Well, you'd be able to have like
six modules. That's it.
We did have a special rule for that for people who really wanted it.
Oh, but if you buy like the all-in-one, like the Moog.
Yeah, like a Model 15.
Moog 50s, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't say Moog. I'm sorry. I'm going to get.
Sorry. It's okay.
I said Moog and then looked at Will.
Yeah.
Who was very. No, I think
you'll find
it.
Moog.
That's your construction. I would never pull you up on something like that.
Okay.
I would just think
it was in my heart when I glanced at you and I was like, oh, Moog.
So the Mini Moog Model D.
That's the one. The wooden one you can lean it up.
The tilt was always nice actually.
I don't know if I prefer it without the tilt though. That's pretty great.
I remember seeing when it was flat for the first time and realizing it wasn't just made like it looks so cool.
It's just
flat.
Everything about that synth, I come back to it. It's been on every album since I bought it. You know, as my wife would say, she works in fashion, the cost per wear is incredible. Cost per use.
Yeah.
The amount of value I've extracted from that object is immeasurable. Yeah. Honestly, I love it so much. It's like, it's a romantic instrument. It's got a sound. It depends on the heat in the room. It will sound differently, you know.
But we can still upsell some dreams here.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we?
Talk to me.
We can. Because you don't have to have the 2017 reissue. Oh, you could have,
of course, I could.
You could have an original. You could have some. What about from somebody you admire?
I'll tell you what. If Brian Eno ever had one,
I'm sure
he probably did.
Yeah, he definitely did.
Yeah, like a massive hero of mine.
You've seen him playing them with Roxy Music, right?
Yeah, he must have played them with Roxy Music.
Yeah, Virginia Plains got it all over it. Isn't that I'm riffing here. I could be totally wrong, but I'm sure. But you know, you can't trust Top of the Pops, can you? Because they might have just shipped in some stuff for him.
It's like maybe Peter Gabriel had one.
Peter Gabriel will have definitely had one as well. I mean, all those guys were getting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Peter Gabriel's got loads and loads of stuff still, I think.
Oh, maybe it was probably before the time of, I mean, Delia Derbyshire, she was 60s, right? Mm. This synth was late 60s, early 70s? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. 70s. Must have been 70s.
I thought it was. Must be early 70s if it's 70s.
My guess is 72.
Yeah. 73, I'll go with.
Will, call it.
I want to say 69.
Well, that might be
amazing. Yeah. 70.
1970, well,
1970.
There we go.
They landed on the moon, then they made the Moog.
Yeah.
That's the order.
Okay, that's right, yeah.
Hell of a 12 months.
Yeah. And now this? Whoa!
Yeah.
Would you stick with the one you've got already? Because you have the sentimental...
I'll keep the one I have, because I love it.
Yeah.
You know, for me, this one was owned by David Bowie's personal assistant. I don't care, man.
Okay.
That stuff, if you like feeling important, then that's great. Go for it. Not you. One. I don't know, I just feel like...
My pearls!
It brings it back to the kind of... Your studio's not a museum. It's not a place where you should kind of go, you know, you don't want to feel intimidated by it. You want to feel like you can revel in its creativity. And I'm not like this one here. It's like the fucking wine cellar. Like, yeah, chill out, yeah. Guys.
That is interesting. I think that, like, when artists sell loads of equipment, you see, like, you know, Sotheby's or Christie's sort of auctions and stuff. Part of you goes, oh, how could they sell? And you go, no, but to them, it's only you that wants to own like this guitar that was used on a tour that they used once. For them, it was just like, that wasn't important.
Yeah. Well, quite. I think that the emotional value of something sometimes is what you create with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
As it should be.
Yeah, indeed.
Really.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was like, God, I hope I'm not going to be like Mr. like shitting on all the tech. But to some extent, these things are tools, and the tools allow you to make magic.
Yeah.
And the magic is what you need to get from these tools. So, I don't know, I could have a new one, maybe built by... Is it... Who's the new owner of Moog? I don't know.
In Music.
Okay, I don't know who they are.
They have Akai as well.
Okay.
And Elysis and M Audio.
Okay, so it's gone from being like an independent thing to... I guess it wasn't when I bought it, right?
No, it would still be.
I would hold
music.
On to mine then. Yes, because I guess.
Like, made in Asheville, North Carolina.
I've been to the.
Have you?
Yeah. The factory, it was great. Yeah, amazing place. It felt like an old car workshop. You know what I mean?
Really?
It felt like. Just people who really care about the craft of building something. Yeah, and that it really comes across. Yeah. And actually, when I talk about gear, often I'm a bit cynical about it. I'm like, you don't need anything, you just need a laptop. But actually, sometimes when you buy something that has so much care behind it, that will come across in how you interact with it. I do think that's true.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you feel like a beautiful, beautiful preamp and you feel the way it's made and you feel the impact it has on what you're running through it, it's like, gosh, the people who made this really understand and think about sound, you know, and that care is something that you almost step up to the plate with, and you're like, oh, I've got to care about my music, because if I'm using nice stuff, I've got to really give a shit, you know?
Yeah. And there's no excuses.
Well, exactly. If you're
not allowed to go, well, it's because I don't have... It's like, you've got all the stuff now.
Exactly.
This is the stuff that was on the hit records.
Exactly.
So.
That's exactly the opposite of what I was saying. So if you've got all the amazing stuff, there's no reason you can't make something amazing. If you've got a laptop, also, I kind of think the same thing.
Yeah.
So there's...
Well, people have made amazing records on both.
On both,
and
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why that is fundamentally such a valid... The most valid point you could make, I think. I couldn't agree with that more. People have made incredible records, probably on their phone nowadays. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, definitely have.
Very much so.
But yeah, so Moog... Is it Mini Moog or is it...
Mini Moog. Mini Moog Model D.
That's the one. Love it.
Okay.
Absolutely love that.
Great
I don't
choice.
Like the new wall. They've done a darker wood one. I prefer the lighter wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more aesthetically pleasing.
I'm into that.
Although, with all of your antique furniture,
yeah.
Do you want to go
such
dark wood?
Punch, aren't I? Welcome, guys. Talking about it, saying it's not a museum, making it look like one.
yeah.
Antique shop.
Well, I just wanted to feel like there's a human touch to it, is what I'm saying. I don't want it to feel you
like it's
and
come
feel...
out of a production line as such. Yeah,
I just want to feel like there's a human feeling to it. You know, it's not intimidating.
Okay, well let's move on to item number three and lock that Moog in.
What was one Moog. Was the one was the recorder? Two was the Moog.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got there in the end.
Got it.
Three is another synth I bought that was far less expensive, but I bought it really at the right time. I was like a Bitcoin bro with this one. I bought a Juno 106 in 2012 or 13, I think, and I bought it for £200.
So that's still quite late for £200, though. You were still it wasn't just a bargain because of the time. Were going for probably £600, £700, £800.
That's right. And that synth. I just can't. I mean, my poor Juno 106.
And was all the voice chips working, or did you have to get it
repaired? Everything. It's only now. After it's literally this week. I moved everything to my new studio, and nothing worked.
Oh. Brilliant.
But the one thing I was most disappointed about was the Juno 106. All the voice chips, I guess, have just kind of died. So I need to get it serviced. So
easy enough job. The Juno Stock Exchange that Will is looking at on his laptop right now. I glanced over.
Are they super expensive now?
So the average price. For a Juno now is about £1,700.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
That's on Reverb. They have a sort of price tracker.
Yeah.
Time.
I actually just joined Reverb because I've never been on it before, and I know lots of people who really, you know, they spend a lot of time with it.
R.I.P. your wallet.
Really?
Yeah.
The value you got out of that, though, you're talking about value again, £200, loads of stuff, and it's only just having issues. That's great.
Yeah. But also just the sounds and the, as I say, the playability. We're talking about knob per function kind of thing. That synth is the kind of polyphonic counterpart to the
And do you have it MIDI'd up?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And do you know what I just discovered? I'm an absolute, like, old dad here, but, like, I didn't realise you could, like, Bluetooth MIDI. You just plug a little Bluetooth MIDI cable in things, and then because I had a MIDI interface.
Yeah.
Everything was plugged into that. Mm-hmm. And I plugged it into my new Mac, and it just doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work at all.
So have you gone to, like, WIDI or something?
I just went to, like, Amazon, and then I found, like, Bluetooth MIDI, and they're these little Yamaha things that you plug in the back of
Yamaha
them.
Ones, yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I had the CME ones that I think you were just looking at, Will, and
they're not, like, if you add it up, you are spending money if you've got a lot of MIDI gear. But it's incredible, because I hate cables, you know, I mean, just, like, having to get behind things, like, amazing. So, yeah, I do have the Juno MIDI'd up, which is great. You know, being, I think it's much more exciting just to be able to send stuff to it. You know, that's the real trick. It's not really using it as
and
a
then
MIDI.
You just
yeah, that stuff for me is so crucial.
So the notes are being played, but you get to do the live
exactly
tweaking of knobs.
Tweaking of knobs.
Yeah, that all of the can I have that as a little, like, bonus extra? Like, everything's just wirelessly MIDI'd, or is everything just MIDI'd up? Cables and
I think that's goes
enough
into
wireless MIDI if you want. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So the Juno 106,
right?
Yeah,
locked
everything
in.
About that sound, the sound of that synth, is just—it's just incredible. It's so warm, it's so rich, but it can be so, like Todd Edwards, the house and UK garage producer. You know, used it, all of his bass lines were that, and you hear it, and it's just like it's just got so much to it. I love it, and it's so simple, it's so easy to use, and it's not difficult to get a good sound.
Sounds
out.
Like a record straight away when you touch it, like,
and it's so inspiring. Mm. It's not like it doesn't present you with this problem of, like, right, what are you going to do with me then? It's like, right, okay. It's like, I'm here for a good time.
Yeah. Not a long time.
not a long time. Just tweak my knobs.
Yeah.
See how it goes, and we'll have a party.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you want. That's the energy you want.
Yeah.
You don't want this kind of sneery synthesizers, synths who, like, require you to read a fucking manual. So
it's
you can use
like
it.
A it's challenge, like they're challenging.
Yeah, and the reason
go on, see what the reason you can make music with this.
Yeah, the reason people enjoy those synths.
Yeah,
it's not because the music's good. It's just because they've got over the fucking hurdle of learning how to use it. And they're like, I can do it. It's like, great, you can fly a plane that has a million controls.
Yeah,
but you can go from here to Torbay. Great.
Yeah,
good job. Well done. Okay. Or you go from. It's like. For me, the process is about musical instruments sounding like a synth, sounding like a musical instrument. That same feeling of it being inspiring to play.
Okay.
I love that as an analogy, though. Learning to fly your own plane to go nowhere in particular versus just getting on a flight and going somewhere nice.
Well, I think that's, I am. That was amazing. How did I come up with that so quickly?
Genius.
That's really good. Really good.
No, but I feel like it's the same kind of people who have, like, kit cars. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, great, you built your own car. Great.
Where are you ever going to take that?
But that's fine. Huh. You can do that. And that is enjoyable in its to its own end.
For
sure. I don't have a problem with that.
But it's people that like the building of the car, not the driving of the car, maybe.
Yeah, but it's the people who go, hey, you didn't build your own synth. Oh, you're using a preset? Yeah, I'm using a preset. Is that okay? It's like a Korg Triton. Am I allowed to do that? Do I need to program my own Stradivarius presets? Or?
I think a lot of time, it's like people, I mean, we love gear and we're gear nerds, but I think it gives them an excuse of why they haven't maybe been as successful as they wanted to be with their music, because it gives them a diss of other people. Like, oh, well, they're successful, but they didn't make their...
They're cheating in some way.
Yeah. And it gives you...
Which is
gives you yourself a pat on the back, like, well, you know, I may not be successful at this, but I made all of the sounds myself.
Yeah. But I love people who are maniacally detailed about things and are so good at programming things. Like, you know, I think there are some absolutely, like, virtuistic musicians who can do this stuff, and it sounds incredible.
Yeah. Both.
That's the magic.
Yeah.
That is when I'm like, I need to quit. Because I did just use a preset from Omnisphere. But that's great. That leads me nicely onto my next one.
Okay, next item. Item number four. I'd like to remind you at this point, as you're halfway through, that you have no speakers or monitors.
Okay. Okay, that's a good point.
I mean, you've got a laptop. It's got speakers in it.
I bought these amazing headphones the other day, and I cannot remember what they're called. I think they're Sennheisers. They're open back. My friend recommended
the 800s.
I think so. They were quite expensive. They're about £400 or so.
Yeah.
But I love them.
And you're going to choose those over monitors, or are you going to get
I'm going to, those. I've got to choose between one or the other, really, because I'm going to waste some spots here. Aren't
yeah.
I?
Yeah, you can have both, but you'll eat up two items.
Okay, I do need to be thoughtful here. Then, I would say this because I know really nothing about speakers. I want the speakers that sound best in that space and don't colour the sound too much. My mate was going, what's it? Something ATCs?
Yeah, ATCs.
ATCs
yeah.
are good, yeah.
Lovely.
ATCs, yes.
Yeah.
For me...
have you been to a studio or somebody else's place that have... that's?
The problem is I don't go to many... I don't go and do the research. And this is where my friend, my mate Tom, he's just so good at learning how a speaker is behaving in a space and understanding how to mix to the space and that speaker, but making that work everywhere, you know.
Right.
I think because I don't mix my own music, that's such a crucial part of why I'm maybe not as invested intellectually in speakers, and I should be, but I just try and... Well, no, I do think it's really important, but...
So what do you have right now?
I've got some Focals. I can't remember what they're called, but they're great. I've had them so long.
Big ones or the little ones?
The little ones.
Little, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But some nice ATCs. He sent me a link
to some. You could go big Focals, stay in the same world.
Yeah, I do like the Focals. I do like them a lot. I've actually been writing a list of ATC SCM25A Pros.
Well, okay.
So that's a classic.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, but they're so expensive. Yeah, but this is my... There's no budget.
There's
no
budget.
We're chilling out. Let's do those. Yeah.
The big boys.
That's $8,500.
Mm.
For a pair of those.
Enough, isn't it?
Yeah. That's nice.
Shake their cabin walls.
That's a pair, though, isn't
it's
it?
It's going to wake
that's a pair.
Up.
Let's think about that. You know, you might do 10 albums on those. You might have them in 10 years.
Yeah.
It's an investment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, speakers are a great investment. Because
I think one of the most important investments, actually.
Mm.
I say that saying, like, I don't really think about speakers very much, but actually maybe because I bought some really nice Focals back, you know, whenever it was, 6 years
And then you blink
ago.
And you've been using them 10 years and you think, oh, these have paid themselves so quickly. Like, it's...
Yeah. Again, the cost per wear thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kat.
And the technology hasn't really changed that much. I mean, there's... But a great set of speakers from, like, early 2000s, 90s. You know, there was the change from passive to active, which was quite a huge leap. But apart from that, it's all quite tweaky.
People still rock the NS10s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's what works fundamentally. And I don't think there's any formula of magic behind any of this. If I get these speakers, will my music be great? It's like, no. Nothing to do with that. If you know how to mix and you know how to produce music that sounds good on those speakers, but also translates to the phone or the AirPods.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do I get the AirPods with the...
Yeah, with your phone, yeah.
Fine.
That's sort of a personal
crucial.
Effect. Yeah,
yeah, yeah personal. Fine. Personal effect.
I'd mix a lot of music on AirPods.
Really?
Everyone listens on AirPods.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really important. You know, if that's exactly where it will be received fundamentally, which is a cynical thing to say.
Not at all.
But that's kind of it. You know, it's like when people used to mix music in cars, you know, it's like...
Because so much music was consumed.
Yeah.
So you've gone with the ATCs.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to have a big set of speakers then for the kind of music that you're making?
Well, my music is funny because people... I mean, it's not really club music. It's not really radio music.
Sad dance music is what it's called?
Maybe I coined that term a long time ago.
Sad bangers.
Is it? Yeah.
That was actually a term, though. Like, it crossed over into pop more with, like, the Robin with Every Heartbeat.
Yeah.
Heartbreak kind of dance.
I guess it would be like Teardrops by Womack and Womack would be the original sad banger, wouldn't it? For me, I remember loving that tune as a child as well. But yeah, I guess that's always had such an impact on me. But because I grew up probably one of the first generations listening and consuming music on headphones, you know, like that was such a crucial way of me listening to music that it's kind of that's the format I ended up writing for, really, is this kind of electronic music that might be, you might put it on and it might just kind of be like incense in your room, you know, it might just like kind of color the air, or sometimes
musical wallpaper,
kind of. But I think that's like the Brian Eno thing of like stuff that you like his music for airports
thing was really important to me.
But my albums kind of go in and out of being passive listening and much more like actively trying to do something to your, you know, your ears. I've done more ambient records and more kind of records you might hear in a club. But I really do write for headphones. That's why I love that. Before we spoke about monitors, the first thing I said, oh yeah, I bought these headphones, they're amazing. And it's like, yeah, I really do mix a lot on headphones. And one of the guys who I've collaborated with a lot, David Wrench, a mix engineer, I think he mixes on headphones as well. A lot of his mixing, he might even be like, William, that's not correct. That's Welsh.
But they'll reference it.
But he's like, I might be wrong there, but I definitely know he has like a sub that he kind of sits on or something like that. But, you know, I remember him saying, yeah, most of it's on the computer, which is so revelatory because I listen to his mixes. Oh my God, they are so incredible. You know, he makes it sound like caramel. He makes it sound like tactile, you know, and to be able to do that with headphones or, you know, not even the most special speakers is really the magic there. So, yes, I might have an £8,000 pair of speakers, but it's probably still going to be mixed by someone else, my music.
But they're going to be fun to work on, right?
It'll be fun to work on. And
and you've got your AirPods anyway.
Yeah.
So where are we now? Item number five, closing in.
Goodness.
Item number five.
Let's go with a soft synth. Let's go with a VST or an AU, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Omnisphere.
Popular choice.
Do lots of people go for that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it does a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's just amazing. It's like a Korg Triton.
Is it still on, what version? Are you two? Are we on two still?
I think it's 2.5 right now, maybe.
It's got to be time for a three, isn't it? It's been a long time, though. When did two come out? Or have you still got the first one?
I do have two, I think.
Right.
2.8.
It still
now.
Looks like it's made in 2001, which is something I love about it.
Mm-hmm. When did it come out, 2.8? When was the last release? When was the last update? What can they do with three, though?
Maybe make it look like it's not The Matrix is currently showing at cinemas. But that's cool. I don't mind.
I'd love it if it said that on the update as well. It finally doesn't.
Okay. So 2001, October 2001.
Yeah, that was probably Matrix Reloaded, guys.
2021.
Sorry, 2021.
Oh, no, that's not... That's
the original, but when it was originally released...
I would say 2003, I would say on this.
Six.
Eight.
Ooh!
An absolute...
Guess the date,
essential.
Come back for more.
I remember hearing, you know, famous musicians use presets from Omnisphere and be like, I'm fine with using them. You know, like, I remember hearing, like, a Fortet record, and it's like, it's just an Omnisphere preset. But the way he programmed it, made it sound absolutely incredible, you know.
So what are your particular uses? When do you think I'm opening Omnisphere? I've got this idea.
If I'm on a flight to somewhere and I don't have either the Moog or the Juno, actually, some of those, you know, emulations they make of those synths are absolutely incredible. But also just things like textural pads, things like that. The piano stuff is good. I have Keyscape as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no bundles, right?
Do you want me to?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Sorry.
No bundles.
Okay. Well, given that, I'll exclude Keyscape because this is making me consider my. Is this four or five?
It's
five.
This is your first. You've got one more after this.
Okay. I'm just picturing this studio. This is a nice studio. This is a really nice studio.
We will
studio.
Do a rundown before we get to your luxury item so you can have a little.
That's fine.
As a whole.
Take backs.
Yeah.
Omnisphere is amazing. Do you either of you use it?
I've never used it, actually.
Honestly, it's one of the most inspiring instruments. I think I'm looking for instruments that inspire me. That's why I have the Moog, that's why I've got the Juno. Omnisphere is just incredible. You open it and it's like, you know, it's such a good starting point for sounds.
Yeah.
It's such
I used
a good
use it a lot,
point.
The cliche, but a lot for bass because it was just, you get some nice drums, you know, you're making and you go through the presets and they sound like records immediately, that kind of thing. So you're like, it keeps you going.
And there's nothing wrong with doing that. I think my studio, the rule, if there's like, that is number one rule. If you find inspiration in a preset, don't in any way judge yourself for thinking like that. You know, you're immediately pissing on your own fire of inspiration. It's ridiculous. It's like, it's so important that inspiration is what carries you through the rest of the record because there's nothing wrong with it. You know, and I think that's me embracing using presets would be using Omnisphere. So much of my music is just Omnisphere presets. But that's fine. So much of my music is other people's music that I've sampled and tried to recontextualize because now I think music, the process of making it is about recontextualizing things culturally. And that's what I sometimes try and do, you know, taking a sample from Big Thief and putting it up against, you know, X, Y, and Z. I'm just trying to imagine, remember other stuff. Like, it's that embracing that way of thinking has been very crucial for my development as a music producer, not getting stuck in like the world of, you know, kind of smaller internal conflicts. I think it's more about bigger ideas, I think. And actually Omnisphere is just like me admitting that it sounds incredible. I think one thing I often do with it is I will print it as audio and then manipulate that. One of the things I really do a lot is actually take things out of the realm of being a MIDI file and then printing that audio, and then
it's like creating your own samples.
I guess that's a lot of what I use it for, you know, time stretching things, reversing things. Like the reverse function is just the most important thing. It just makes things instantly feel otherworldly, you know.
Is that something as a pianist that you clocked onto pretty quickly then? Because the reverse piano sound is like the first time I heard it, I was just like, whoa.
Like reverse harp.
Yeah. Reverse harp. Okay,
reverse vocals.
Yeah.
You know, one of my tunes, Elixir, is like, everyone's like, what's she saying? I'm like, it's just a reversed vocal. If you just reverse it, you'll hear it. I don't know. But Missy Elliott, do you remember, like,
put my tongue down, flip it and reverse
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then just has that line reversed, I guess. Amazing.
Yeah. Exactly. But, I think Omnisphere is such an amazing starting point. Look, I'm not saying go make all of your music with Omnisphere presets, because it will sound like it was. But as a starting point, as a trampoline to better ideas, I think it's absolutely essential, you know.
So we're locking it in.
Yeah.
Omnisphere 2.8.
And, yeah. I mean, the number of records that have been made just with like the stock sequence on a synthesizer. I mean,
go back to look at like Timbaland and the Neptunes in the early noughties and late 90s. They were using a Korg Triton. Do you know what I mean?
Even before that, Timbaland's on, is it Pony by Genuine? The sound. That's just a preset sound on a
and how cool is
on
that
an emu.
It's his it's filtered through his like refracted through his kind of vision of how he thinks about things.
This sound is actually the preset is called Eow. So it's just like, you know, when they used to just describe the presets because then you have like eight characters, so it'd be just E-E-E-O-O-O-W-W and like oh it sounds exactly how this 8 LCD screen has presented me with.
Yeah. What's that? That old synth in the early 90s that like Enya used loads. I can't remember what it's called. It's probably a FM synth, but it had that amazing piano sound.
And D50.
Yeah. D50, that's exactly D50. What I was thinking of, yeah.
Yep.
Is that a sampling keyboard or is it an FM synth?
The D50 was interesting. So it was, I believe they had like...
fraction samples.
Yeah, like the attack would be an actual sample and then the body would be synthesized.
Wait, how clever.
So do you get more out of your sound?
And I love that.
So, I mean, those sounds,
they're amazing.
They hold up.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a bit like having a, you know, a DX7 is probably such, if you know how to program a DX7, good on you. Like
Gary Barlow.
Gary Barlow does.
I read that. I saw that.
Amazing. What a legend.
What a guy.
We actually called that episode that because, not many people can.
No. So I would use a DX7.
Just him and Brian Eno, that's it.
Exactly. I would use a DX7 as a preset device.
Yeah.
I'm going to
go
here just for that. You know, that's how I view Omnisphere in a sense.
Or you make it in FMA or Dext or one of the easier to program, then you get the SysX and port it into the hardware.
Export,
that's the only way.
Exactly.
You can program
for mortals.
For mortals,
If
Gary's not available, you have to use...
get Gary Barlow to come and show me how to program a DX7. Yeah. That's amazing.
It's brilliant,
well,
isn't it?
Maybe we can...
Only takes a minute. No, it does.
Oh, God. That's what that song was about.
That was...
Excellent. Okay, well, we're on to your final item.
Okay.
Final studio item before it's a luxury.
So I have a question, because this might just be included. I know you said no bundle.
Finger on the bottle.
No, but...
Get ready.
Here we go. Is the Logic software, all of the plugins included with Logic?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Fine. Okay.
Really is safe. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Given that that's the case, I think fundamentally one of the most important parts of me, of how I make music, is sampling music.
Yeah.
Really. So, if that's included, I don't need to include a sampler, do I?
Nope. You've got the Logic.
No, it should be okay.
Yeah.
EXS.
You don't have any way of recording sound apart from the.
You might need a
field
microphone,
recorder.
Yeah. I have a microphone. You will you have the field recorder microphone?
I've got the field recorder microphone. I could cleverly. I mean, I do have. This is either going to be.
You definitely didn't need those preamps. That you
I was going to say, did we go for the preamp?
Yeah,
I mean you can change.
You can change it.
Okay, at home I have a 1073, and I absolutely love that, the Neve.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not recording much at the moment, it's just the Moog that goes through that,
right?
Which is quite swag.
No other instruments as well.
Yeah, it's like a very, very nice thing. I mean, I'm going to
trust chain.
Yeah, a nice chain. given that I don't record vocals very often, I might just...
pop the mic.
But I'm going to want to record vocals. So this is not sexy, though, is it?
Do it into the field recorder, though.
Would you do that?
No, but
because I have
a harsh indictment of this entire operation.
No, I mean, I would have known it. You
this shit. This is terrible.
No, it's great. Who it's great selection
for yeah, you. It's a great selection
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. It's about. No, it's for everyone. Uh-huh. This is the way. This is the studio.
It's only forever
yeah,
studio.
Exactly.
I'm really authoritarian yeah. there.
Okay, I'm struggling between. There's three things I would wish I could put. A U87, a mic.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
A real piano, a really, really nice upright piano, or a Teenage Engineering OP1. Because all of those three things, I can't decide between these last three things.
Well, you have but to.
Indeed, I do. All of these things have really impacted how I make music. Piano, just because there's something lovely about not turning on a computer and just playing an instrument. That, for me...
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Is really valuable. But then I've got to weigh up against, okay, if I'm recording everyone's vocals through my field recorder, that's great, but I might not get that kind of, you know, the clarity of what I want, but maybe I should just embrace that and use that. Or maybe I don't need a piano. Maybe I can just play my synths as a MIDI controller. So there's going to be a compromise there. And then the other thing is the OP1.
Does the Juno have velocity sensitivity on MIDI?
No,
output?
I don't think it does. The Juno, I don't even think, I can't even remember if the Moog does or not. Maybe, probably.
Does the
velocity
reissue,
sensitivity?
Does the reissue output polyphonic MIDI with velocity?
It'll be polyphonic, but
it's great. It's like having your own Siri, isn't it? Just guys, does this do that? Look that up. You're drinking whiskey.
Yeah. I wish I was. But that is one thing with, like, you know, not having a piano. Even the most realistic piano sounds in
They're just not the same. They don't respond to the room.
Yeah. But why? Yeah. It's not even going to respond to your hands if we don't have velocity sensitivity
exactly.
coming out of your Juno or your...
Or you can just sit and program it in Logic.
Oof, yeah, every single note.
Yeah.
The old days.
The one thing I'm grateful...
Even the DJX had velocity sensitivity out on the MIDI.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a lot of knowledge about the DJX.
That's all I had for like 10 years.
But that's amazing, though, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The early years.
Yes, looks like...
So the Juno or the
Model
Moog?
D.
The Moog.
Yeah.
Does,
and what is it, three octaves?
Yeah, it's not a huge amount.
37 keys?
It looks like it does.
Mm.
Right, okay.
I'm really torn between an OP1 because ultimately that instrument, ever since I've had it, I've never not used it. I love it. It's so inspiring.
I mean, that sounds like the one then, doesn't it?
But the piano, man. The piano, like, as you say, like, I've written a few songs in my time. Sometimes you just walk up to a piano and a song comes out of your fingers. And that is just takes you out of this world.
And everything, even though the OP1, the interface and everything is inspiring, technically everything it can do, you can do in Logic.
Of course you can. Of course you can.
You've got a field recorder as well.
It's probably my most faffy, hidden behind menus, difficult to use thing.
But that's what makes it brilliant, right?
Yeah, in a way, that is me attesting to that. That way of thinking can be really fun.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's funny because we obviously went with the TP7.
Yeah.
I would have just said a Sony one, but there is something so nice about the way they make products. It's incredibly expensive. I'm not going to deny that, but
it's the Fantasy Forever Studio.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to be judged.
No.
And I will not be judged. I shall not be judged.
But then, you know, an incredible... I'm really struggling here, lads. I don't know what to say. Do I record a microphone often enough? No. Off the table. It's between a piano, which is like my...
Well, maybe maybe you ditch the field recorder and you use the OP...
Use the phone. Use the phone. Okay.
Phone, and does the OP1 must have a built-in mic, does it?
It does have a built-in sampling, doesn't it, the OP1?
The OP1 does have built-in sampling.
It can kind of
be a
field
recorder.
But the
mic itself is probably not a scratch on the iPhone mic, probably, or the algorithm that it's
using. But you do still have then two, your phone and the OP1 as field recorder-type devices, and that would give you the OP1 and room for a piano. You would lose the field recorder.
Okay, that's a tough one. Let's get rid of the field recorder.
Okay.
And replace it with another Teenage Engineering.
Yes.
OP1.
The OP1, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Non-negotiable. And then I can afford myself a piano.
Yep. Any piano.
Any piano. It's going to be a Yamaha upright.
Going to steal it off any artist?
No.
No?
No, no, no.
Is it going to be any particular colour?
It would be... I'd even love an old shit piano. I don't really care.
A haunted Victorian
piano. Haunted Victorian plays by itself.
Antique.
If I could find a... You remember when Bon Iver wrote... Was it Bon Iver? Or was it for Emma Forever Ago?
Okay.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
He found this random guitar and it resonated in this unbelievably beautiful way. And that was the sound of the record. So there's something so beautiful about that. Like, I can't explain what this piano would sound like. It wouldn't be on the edge of being too felty, because I find that that sound is a bit drawn out now.
But essentially what we're saying is you don't want to just walk in and get the best new piano. It's got to have a bit of story, a bit of history, a bit
of
vibe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a particular piano sound that you love from other people's recordings?
Do you know what? In terms of listening to piano music, it was funny, I listened to it literally yesterday for the first time in about 10 years. Do you remember Chilly Gonzalez?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember his album, what was it called? Oh my God, it's just lost me. He originally was called Gonzalez, and there was a track on there called Overnight. I can't remember what the album was called. It was white on the front cover. The sound that he had of that piano was almost like it sounded like a recording of Debussy or Satie or something like that. It was so lovely, and it was really my introduction into that lovely solo piano. It was called Solo Piano. That's what his album was called.
That's why it wasn't memorable.
Exactly. That piano, that record is about his relationship with that piano, and that is so beautiful because it's not just about the music itself. It's about him, the piano, and the kind of...
So yeah. Should we take that one?
Could take his.
You're definitely thinking of upright then over...
Yeah, an upright. I don't want a grand... I don't like dramatic piano pieces. Okay. That's not really what I'm about. I just love noodling away, listening to, like it feeling like comforting and beautiful and familiar.
Mm.
But, yeah. So let's just go through this. Next.
I just want to throw in before Will does this rundown.
Yeah, go on.
How are you going to record this piano?
I'm not. I'm just going to play it.
It's just for vibe.
Love it.
Yeah, because I think as soon as you record a piano, everything's ruined in a way. Do you know what I mean? It becomes formal. It's like, oh, shit, I've got to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
Like the instrument, that the feeling of just being with the piano and just playing it.
Yeah.
I don't have a field recorder anymore, though, do I?
No, so I can't even... got the OP1 on
your phone. My phone.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I've got to have compromise.
Yeah.
Unlimited budget, but there's a compromise in the amount of things.
Mm.
That's the podcast.
Yeah, man, it's clever. You guys.
Okay, well, let's.
So, whose piano are we taking? Is it just anything?
Chilly
you've got
Gonzalez,
off, like...
right?
I don't want to take someone else's piano. I'm just gonna have a stock piano that sounds exactly how I want it to sound, and I can't articulate that. But
is it going to be one where? Do you remember the yellow free ads?
Hmm.
And you just like piano.
Yeah.
And pick up.
Yeah.
Good for beginner.
Yeah,
piano.
That's it, man. Yeah,
and no charge. They just want it out of their house.
Yeah, exactly. There's maybe it's an unloved piano.
Unloved piano.
And while you're installing it, you're underneath it.
Yeah,
and you're putting it in play, and you see Chilly Gonzalez just scratched underneath it. And you're like,
exactly. Yeah,
the history is here.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
exactly.
I do. I want to step away from my studio feeling like a museum. That's the one thing.
Okay,
I don't want to feel this is very important because it's like, this is a studio. My ultimate studio, ultimately, is just one I can sit in and write in.
Yeah, and have fun in all day. Yeah,
because that's
good
the
music,
point of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, well, have a listen to this. Will, take us through what has been created for the Forever Studio.
We're on a loch in the Scottish Highlands, in a wooden cabin with a large window surrounded by trees. The floors are made of oak. You've got off-white walls covered in your child's drawings.
That's nice.
Your computer is a Mac M3 Max laptop. Your interface is an Universal Audio Apollo X8P. Your DAW is Logic Pro X. And for your six items, you've chosen a Mini Moog Model D reissue, the one that you own, your own Juno 106. For speakers, you've chosen the ATC SCM25A Pros. For soft synths, you've chosen the Omnisphere 2. You chose the OP1 as your penultimate instrument. And your final studio pick is an unloved piano purely for inspiration.
Yeah, this is great, man. Yeah.
Locked in, stamped, approved.
Boom.
Done. Love it.
That's
One more. We have one more thing, which isn't a piece of gear. Okay. So you've got the luxury item in your studio, which isn't a piece of studio kit.
Okay.
What are you going to choose for that?
Okay, let's go La Marzocco coffee machine.
Okay, bean to cup?
It's not bean to cup. I have to have a grinder as well and stuff like that. Like, I'm not even a massive cup coffee person, but...
Bean to cup? Bean to cup man, are you?
Well, I was thinking, well, it's one item, though. How are you...
I knew I recognised you from those Nespresso adverts.
That can only be a compliment, considering who's in those adverts.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, I'll take that.
Silver fox.
No.
You devil.
Yeah, probably. It's going to be a coffee machine or just like a fridge. Can I have cold drinks?
Yeah.
Are you allowed a fridge? I mean, like, we're not throwing you out.
You started off quite big and you scaled it back to a fridge.
I think...
Well, no. Let's go like a lovely coffee machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. So you're an espresso man?
Yeah, I like a coffee with no bullshit, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, I really don't like milk. I don't understand. Yeah. If you drink a flat white, oat milk flat white...
Straight down the lens, look at that!
You cannot listen to tourist music, right? And I'm sure you do.
I did order one this morning, I'm so sorry.
I don't... The thing is, I just don't understand that as a coffee. I just don't like milk. I don't know what it is about milk. I've never been a massive milk guy.
Weak bones.
Probably.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a worry.
Yeah. I'm not going to get much vitamin D up in Scotland either, so I'm going to be a right piece
of work.
Nah,
you'll be fine. Every year it gets better and better.
I'd have a coffee machine. I love a coffee.
Yeah.
It's great sitting out
over
the loch with a coffee and maybe some, you know, as long as I can have podcasts that I can listen to and audiobooks that I can listen to.
Only this one, unfortunately.
Only this and only the one that we're doing currently.
On repeat.
Yeah. He's gone absolutely mental. It's written all over the walls. Are they his child's drawings? No, that's him.
That's his drawings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The good ones there from his kids.
Yeah, no. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Right, well, let's wrap the podcast up. That's the end of the episode. We've created a fantastic My Forever Studio there, I think. And thank you so much, Will,
Tourist,
for taking the time to come on the My Forever Studio podcast.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That's our show. That's My Forever Studio with Tourist. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time for another adventure into Studio Foreverdom.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.